We're recording. I will call to order the May 17th City of Kirkland 2021 City of Kirkland Design Review Board meeting. We will begin with a roll call.
Randall Brand.
Present.
Brad Brown. Carlos Castaneda.
Here.
Ting Chen.
Here.
Shoshana Cohen.
Here.
Adam Crane. And Tim Olson.
Here.
Thanks.
Okay, we have a couple of minute review to approve, to review and approve, or these would be the November 2nd and December 7th, both from 2020. Do any of the board members have any changes or comments on these? I didn't see anything. So with your approval, can I go with unanimous consent to approve minutes? John?
Okay, so I think what you'd want to do is just ask for a motion to approve in a second. Okay.
So would anyone like to suggest a motion to approve?
I move to approve the two particular meeting minutes.
Second.
Okay, anyone oppose? Okay, so I think that this is all approved by consent, isn't it? Okay, so we can move forward to tonight's agenda. We have one item on the agenda, and that is a conceptual design conference for the final phase in Kirkland Urban. That's Kirkland Urban East. Do we have any members of the audience who wish to speak about any items that is not on the agenda today? I am not familiar with the entire attendees, so you will have to help me with that. I don't think we have any.
Yeah, I don't see anything either.
Okay, and with that, as an I see no unfinished business, we will move forward to Tony for a presentation, for staff presentation. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. You can see my screen here. Let's see here, I'm sorry. Okay, there we go. All right, great. Thank you very much. So we are here tonight for the conceptual design conference for the Kirkland Urban East. As you mentioned, it's the final phase of the Kirkland Urban development. So this particular building, excuse me, here, is located on a small separate parcel, 1.31 acres. The property address is 501 Uptown Court within the Kirkland Urban development. The project will front on 6th Street here to the east of the site. They will also be taking access from 6th Street to the project. The applicant is proposing a 6-story mixed-use building that will consist of approximately 185,000 square feet of office and around 15,000 square feet of retail on the ground floor with 4 levels of underground parking. As I mentioned before, access is from 6th Street for vehicular access. And the applicant has provided a program description and general project information, which includes 3 building massing options for you to consider tonight. I'm going to go over some of the key zoning regulations that apply to the project. The CBD5 zoning allows uses including but not limited to retail, restaurant, and office. Again, the applicant is proposing office and retail with this project, but could also include restaurant as well if they wanted to. The site also did allow residential in one of the phases, but that was separate project. The CBD5A zoning allows a maximum height of 115 feet as measured above the average building elevation. I won't go into the details of the average building elevation, but it's based on kind of the quadrant within the the master plan. Rooftop appurtenances may exceed the height limit by a maximum of 16 feet if the area of those appurtenances and screening do not exceed 25% of the total area of the building footprint. The design guidelines require that the ground level retail be a minimum of 14 feet in height. And as far as setbacks are concerned, the only setbacks that apply to this site are 25 feet from the south property line. The council adopted the design regulations, they also designed some master plan development standards. There's an open space minimum. The project needs to incorporate art into the project. There's a LEED CS Gold requirements for the project. Neighborhood servicing retail and services is what the council was looking for. They want to make a majority of the parking for the site underground, and there's a building use breakdown requirement so that has limitations on how much particular use can be on the site. So staff will be verifying that compliance with those requirements as part of the DRC application. As far as the design guidelines are concerned, as I mentioned before, the site has its own master plan and design guidelines that are used to review the project. A copy of these that was included with the packet that you received. The document includes development standards that apply to the area of the site, design guidelines that apply to all districts on the site, and also district specific guidelines. In this case, we're talking about the mixed use hub district of the master plan. Some of the key design guidelines relate to orientation to the street and streetscape, massing and articulation, blank wall treatments, public spaces, gateway treatments, environmental considerations, pedestrian connections and wayfinding, pedestrian friendly building fronts, parking location and entrances, massing and articulation, and finally building diversity. So there's some of the design guidelines that we'll be looking more as part of the design response conference. So tonight we want you to kind of look at the plans the applicants are going to be presenting and look at the context or setting in which the proposed development will be located, as that is important in determining the appropriate design guidelines that would apply. The following are several questions that are geared towards identifying physical environment around and on the subject property. These questions will help supplement the discussion on key design guidelines appropriate for the proposed project. First, let's look at how does the site relate to its surroundings. The applicant and design review board should discuss the physical and built environment on and around the subject property. Topics include height of neighboring structures, topography, and landscaping. What are some opportunities and constraints of the site and vicinity given the following topics: streetscape, urban form, activities and uses in the area, pedestrian patterns and environments, character of adjacent buildings, and finally, landscaping and open space. Some of the key discussion items we're going to want to have you discuss tonight are: what are some of the key public views of the project? Identify appropriate mitigation techniques for building massing of the proposed buildings. Possible techniques include vertical and horizontal modulation, corner treatment, and roof forms. How does the proposed massing and location of structure relate to or respond to the pedestrian environment? What are opportunities for pedestrian-oriented spaces at street level? What are some of the key pedestrian connections? How would the project engage pedestrians? And finally, what are opportunities for landscaping and/or open space on the subject property? So tonight, we're going to want you to provide guidance to the applicants on their massing options that they are going to present to you. And once we've decided on what massing options to move forward with, we'll want to determine what models, drawings, et cetera, that the applicant should submit as part of their design response conference application. Just for reference, I can put this up later too, but I've also have a outline of what we typically, what we require with the design response application, so we don't kind of double dip on things that are already required by the applicant to submit as part of that application. So with that, if there's not any questions, I can pass it on to the applicant.
Thank you, Tony. And thank you, members of the Design Review Board, for the opportunity to present the KUEES project to you this evening. My name is Thomas Robinson, and I'm here on, I'm the founder of Lever Architecture, and I'm here on behalf of the design team, Sarah Architects, who'd be the interior architects, and GGN, who's the landscape architects based out of Seattle, and also our entire design team. And let me share my screen, and then we'll get right into the presentation. So is everyone able to see that? We're good? Full screen? All right. So I wanted to just start with the site context and location. I'm not going to be presenting the full packet that you've seen to date, but we can obviously, we can definitely refer to it if it's needed. So as you know, it's the project's located in Kirkland at Kirkland Urban East. The Kirkland Urban Campus, this will be the fourth and final building on the campus. So there are three existing buildings, KU North, KU Central, and KU South, and ours is what's located here in the dash that's in the back. One of the key things, as Tony talked about, is really how does this building fit into the existing campus and also, you know, retain, but also have its own character, because this is in a way a building that can be a gateway. We've been to the campus from Sixth Street. We have been partnering and working carefully with a client and with Sarah, our interior architect, and GGN, the landscape architect, to really create a building that we think is really appropriate for the site. As you may know, we're proposing a mass timber office building. So approximately 185 to 195,000 square feet. With 15,000 square feet of retail on the ground floor. And then the two lower levels have a more public program with offices and conference center, and the upper levels are office, and we have four levels of underground parking. So Kirkland, you know, has been transformed over its history. This is an early view of the area showing the site where our project is located, and then the current development. I think that it was a working waterfront shipbuilding mills. And I think that, you know, one of the things that was really exciting to us and to GGN was this idea that it's really a confluence of area rivers and tributaries that basically come into Moss Bay. So you can sort of see here in this diagram is that much of that water from the surrounding area, it's its own watershed and actually drains into Moss Bay. And you can see some of that if you actually go to the water there, you'll see that happening. And for us, that really brought up the idea of stewardship of the watershed. So thinking about how the building itself can be have a positive impact, both right in its location, but regionally. And, you know, one of the key things with stewardship of the watershed is really thinking about forests and thinking about maybe how you harvest forest products, how you manage forests. And that has a direct connection to the health of watersheds that feed salmon habitat. And I think Lever as a firm has been really focused on thinking about the connection between the materials that we use in our buildings and both the economic well-being of the region and also of forests themselves. So this is a little diagram talking about the connections between sustainably managed forests, the kind of major forest products industry, and then thinking about how this building can actually have positive impact within that virtuous cycle. So a big thing that we could spend a lot of time talking about is this idea of embodied carbon and carbon sequestration. These are things. Embodied carbon is the energy that it takes to actually build a building. And because wood is a product that's grown, there's less embodied carbon, less energy it takes to build these mass timber buildings. And you're also storing carbon in the form of the wood in the building for the life of the building. So instead of that wood maybe potentially being burned up in a catastrophic wildfire, it's actually being stored in the building for the life. So that's what we mean by carbon sequestration. And I think another connection for us is the context of Kirkland, the idea of it being, of having a timber history. This was a kind of inspirational photo for us of a wood barge being built at the shipyards. And then there's a kind of new revolution happening, in mass timber in the region. We've been a part of that for the last 5 years, and you're seeing mass timber buildings being built up all along the West Coast. And I think what we're really focused on is how can we actually connect to regional sustainably managed forests, and especially focused on the Washington State. And there's a lot of activity. I'd say Washington is actually the place where so much of this is happening with the companies that are building factories or have built factories and fabrication plants. So we're excited to have the opportunity to work in this context. So Tony already talked about the zoning summary, but this is what was included in your report, but I wanted to just point out, one piece of this, because one of the things is really thinking about honoring the relationship, between Kirkland and the community and the KU East campus. And also this is the home for a client, and there will be, hundreds, 1,000 plus people working in this building every day and coming to shop here. But I think the key thing on this thing is right now, CBD 5A allows 115 foot height limit for the building. And what the building we're proposing is 30 feet below the allowable height. And there's reasons for that, but I think one of the biggest sort of advantages to that is you have more daylight on the ground plane, and the building, which is in a way elevated, has less mass. So that actually impacts the way that we're breaking down the massing in the building, but I just wanted to kind of point that out as we go forward. One of the key reasons for that is we're doing a mass timber building, and for the type of building that the client would like to build, there's an 85 foot height limit to allow us to be able to expose all the wood, and that's a type 3A building. We recently completed a very similar building at this scale for a client, and so that's modeled after that. This is it's very common and proven method, so we're excited to have that opportunity to do that, to do this here. I think I just pulled this slide out from our deck because I think it's one of the sort of key things that we sort of recognize when we're looking at the campus is you have sort of three, I would say, massing moves. One is this idea of a podium. It's in a way has its own character. The idea of a proud volume, and then idea of recessed volumes. And I think when you see, some of the schemes that we proposed, we've tried to actually take that idea and maybe amplify it and introduce landscape into it. Another key item that we would really like your feedback on is what I'm showing here, which is on the left, you can see the requirement on the southern edge of the building to do this street. This is part of the master plan, which is 41 feet wide and has two drive lanes. And in conversations with the fire marshal, what you see on the right is what we would like to propose, where we'd make that a fully pedestrian walkway with only fire access. So you'd have bollards and no vehicles would be allowed in that zone. This is what the fire marshal has asked us to do. And we think from an urban point of view, it's also preferable. So it would be very helpful to get your feedback on that. So I'm going to go through the site and then I'll sort of get into the design options. So I'm sure most of you are very familiar with the site, but just so you understand where the building's located. And this is sort of working our way up from parking level one. And this red box is the new parking that we'll be adding to the site. And then when you come to the park level, which is the Kirkland park level with the Shake Shack and the path, this is that level of parking because that's a lower area. And then we're also adding a logistics level using existing parking entries. As you know, there's a grocery store here, and there's some issues that we're going to be resolving as part of this project relative to logistics. And then we're getting to the plaza level. So this is the key level. And you can see here we have two main retail spaces that sort of activate the corner. And then this is actually a covered arcade that wraps around the building. And I'll talk about the structure of that, but it's, you know, provides a covered space, a differentiated podium, and then a very sort of active street front entry to the main lobby in blue in the center. And that connects directly into the sort of landscape zone that I'll talk about a bit later. And then the upper floors of the office. This is actually, sorry, this is the second floor, which is more of a podium level. It's differentiated from the upper floors. That's going to be more, have a more public conference component. And then the upper levels, this is showing option three, and I'll go through the other options, but showing sort of a series of outdoor gardens that really break down the mass of the building for the upper three floors. So some of the key drivers, I'm going to take you through a series of key drivers that really shape the design. So one is entry access. So this shows you the, in red, you see the pedestrian access to the existing buildings, and then where we are proposing the new access. So it's sort of right across from the pub in this plaza area. Bike entry would also potentially be from the lower level into that zone. And then you can sort of see the garage entries, the two garage entries that we would have. So we'd be coming in on the park level, and then also on 6th Street here. And we're looking at potentially bus drop-off, shuttle drop-off on 6th Street. So from a site design priority, one of the key sort of pieces was this idea of a campus gateway. You know, this is sort of the final building, and it's also, it's KU urban. So it's in a way a more urban experience that's really shared by the city. So thinking about how we can sort of celebrate and pedestrianize that entry there. So that was a key piece of the design. Obviously views, both from a pedestrian point of view, flanking, you know, that are flanked by the two existing buildings, and also from occupants in the building. Obviously, this is a really beautiful site looking out onto the bay. And then how can we make the plaza, you know, this is a really sort of central, nice spot where you can see out. How can we make sure that that space is activated as greenery and is a destination? So we really worked carefully with GGN to really think about how we can maybe bring a more sort of lush landscape experience to this particular site. And I want to talk a little bit more about the landscape ideas. So these are some of the concept plans. On the left, you sort of see the plan. We would still maintain a turnaround, but we're working on ways to sort of soften that so that it isn't so present in the landscape. And one of the ideas here is most of the landscape in the rest of the site is it's not as sort of generous, and it's still there, but a lot of it's trees and potted plants. We're thinking we could do a lusher landscape in this area that fronts onto these plazas. And this is a view looking up from, you know, the auditorium seats, looking up at that landscape and the building here on the right. So really thinking about ways we can celebrate that. And I think going back, and then this is also a view sort of from across the street. So thinking about how this is more of a gateway, that as you're coming down, the view from across 6th Street, you can sort of see that landscape element in the distance to really bring sort of a more forest type landscape into the building. One of the, going back to that idea of stewardship, really thinking of the plaza as a space that really connects to the idea of the watershed and to habitat. On the left is maybe a more traditional plaza landscape. And on the right is really what our goal is to really create a connected place that really celebrates and supports habitat, has a sense of a destination. And one of the goals for this project is net zero water. What does that mean? Where we would actually capture 100% of the water, both from the sky and treat that for usage. So we collect all the water that falls on site, use it for the building. And that's a really positive impact on the watershed, because a lot of the issues relative to pollution of the bay comes from runoff from buildings. So this is just a summary of the site drivers. The idea of the building being part of the community, thinking about those pedestrian access issues, thinking about the landscape. These are all things that will be open to the public. People can enjoy them. There'll also be a place for people that work there, but I think that's an important element. Preserving the views of Moss Bay. The idea of the building can be a gateway. It's a signature building. It might be slightly different from some of the other buildings, but we think that's a good thing, as long as we're really respectful of the massing ideas and character of the building, because it is a mass timber building, which is quite different and has different requirements than, say, a more traditional steel structure. Thinking about the human scale of the plaza, just by not building to the max height, using a more sustainable way of building, but being 30 feet lower, that allows for more daylight in the plaza, and then creating a permeable ground floor that covered space. The inside out drivers are really more specific to the client. I'm going to talk about a couple of them in a little more detail, but they're really about creating a workspace that people want to be in, that's healthy, has access to nature. The idea of experiential delight, I'll go into a little more detail, but that not every space in the building is exactly sort of the same temperature. We'll talk about that in a little more detail, and that the floors are connective. So this, one of the ideas that we're exploring, and I'll show you in the cuts later, is where we have these garden spaces that we can have terraces with large windows that can open and close. So that when it's nice out, you can open those spaces and they can be naturally ventilated. And then maybe be a different temperature than the rest of the building, but really have that access to fresh air that I think all of us want if we're in a closed office building now, or that maybe that's more valuable than it was in the past. And then those would be connected to exterior terraces on the podium level. And then another key thing and innovative approach is this idea of an exoskeleton, so that, on the left, and it'll be made out of timber. On the left, you sort of see a diagram plan of a more conventional building where you have a core, which is structural and also takes the lateral, and then you have a series of columns. And on this building, what we're looking at doing is creating a timber diagrid around the perimeter that takes both the gravity and the lateral. The lateral's, the forces from earthquakes and the forces from wind. And then have cores in the middle that are actually really just for gravity and for systems. And then we span between those to create a really expressive structure, but also something that's really flexible long-term. So these are early sort of conceptual ideas of what that would look like. And you get a sense of the character of the interior with the wood. So I'm going to go through the massing options. And the massing options are really a series of studies that we've done and sort of showing sort of an evolution of our thinking. So hopefully it gives you sort of an insight into how things evolved as we worked with our partner, Sarah, and the client. But before I do that, I just wanted to kind of summarize some of the key elements. This idea of the building as a gateway, taking advantage of the views, and then this idea of a gathering space and really providing a great pedestrian environment that already exists and then reinforcing that. But I wanted to sort of demonstrate, this is this is not our proposal. It's just a massing study. So this is the 115-foot high mass. And then the red dash line is really where our building is maxing out at 85 feet. And then you can see this building now from views from the lower plaza, the upper plaza, from Peter Kirk Park, and from across 6th Street. So you'll see these views a number of times. So I just wanted to kind of review those with everyone. So the first option was really driven, was kind of an inside out option where it was really driven by the client's desire to absolutely maximize the amount of north light available on the site. And it's really focused around a pedestrian arcade on that side with the landscape. And then that would primarily be office. And on the south side, we have the shared spaces, like a series of atriums that are facing south, and then two major cuts, that address the adjacent residential buildings, but also provide southern access. And these are sort of the views of that initial initial sort of concept, which we've called option one. And I think, the key sort of features of like a pedestrian arcade with, we're looking at a wood structure that where the diagrid becomes exposed and is, you have a covered area. And then that diagrid is expressed along that north facade. I think we were excited about the simplicity of the massing. And I think the moves along Sixth Street were working. But I think our concern was really that the north facade was too long and too massive without breaks. So we started to look at other options. So that was the first. So, but this is, a very efficient and I think could be very elegant design. So massing option two was really this idea of introducing double height spaces that in a way kind of rotate up through the building. So each facade, they're slightly different. And you can sort of see what that creates. So these series of gardens that actually change the character of each facade. So you can sort of see what that does. So when you're looking up from the lower plaza, you might have a series of gardenscapes and trees up top. From the upper plaza, you can have this elevated garden. And then from Sixth Street, the garden sort of lower down. And then from a distance, you can sort of see this little crown of landscape there. I think while we were excited about what this was doing spatially for the interior office space, we still, we were concerned that we weren't breaking down the massing enough because there's only these two-story volumes on each facade. And that especially on like Sixth Street, the facade was a bit wider. So we thought, well, is there another option? So this was sort of our final and third option where we're actually wrapping the pedestrian arcade around three sides. And then we're introducing a series of major cuts that terminate on top of the second floor podium. And those would be outdoor garden spaces. And then kind of just for working on the design, introducing a central atrium that then comes down with daylight in the middle. So these cuts and these gardens are associated with the spaces that I showed you previously, where they're in what we call mid-door spaces. So these would be operable, have natural ventilation and be active. So this would be really active facades. And so we were excited about, that opportunity. And I can show you now sort of what that does in terms of really breaking down the massing. And if you go back to that early diagram I talked about where you had the podium element, and then you had the sort of proud elements, and then the elements that are pushed back. We think that by really pushing back and creating these garden spaces, we'd create, a really kind of elegant and green and rich sort of experience in terms of the building. So we're excited about this direction. I think especially when you look at the view from Sixth Street, where the cut really breaks down that expanse and the mass of the building to a nice proportion, and then I think really welcomes you into the campus gateway. So I'm going to take you through the plans of our preferred option, just so you can understand, how it works. I mean, you saw the earlier site plan. This is sort of more specific. So we have these two strong retail anchors at the corners, one that really is on six, then one is internal to the project, an arcade that wraps around, and then a lobby in the center that really is very intuitive and clear, that you'll be able to find it. And then some large meeting rooms and a bike room and a garden. On the second floor, we have amenity spaces, and the group larger amenity spaces are focused on the northwest corner of the building, so it's more active, while we have a series of conference rooms. And then you can sort of see the central atrium that comes down through the center of the building. On that level, we have a garden below, but it's more like the podium element with the arcade. And then when you get to the upper level, we have those cuts that I was showing you previously, these gardens that basically break down the mass on every facade. And you can see sort of the central atrium and then the desk spaces that and all have these connections to green space and the potential to create spaces where we can open up the building and introduce natural ventilation to portions of the structure. So this is a summary of all four, including the max zoning envelope. And as you can see, we do have a preferred option. We hope it's also your preferred option. But you know, we believe that, you know, these buildings, you know, we wanted to sort of show you our way of thinking, and we look forward to your comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Thomas, for a very elaborated presentation. Are there any questions from the board members about the presentation?
Well, this is Randall. I'll go ahead and jump in here, Stark. Could we bring up a site plan?
Yeah.
A site plan or plaza level or... I got a couple of questions there.
Is this one good, or would you like
me? Yeah, that one works just fine. On the at the start, we started looking at, you know, South Property Line Master Plan and how it's 40, 41 feet, and you know, a street and then a pedestrian area. Describe what happens along that south side in between that and the apartment building to the south.
Let me, I think we might have a better plan than this one for that. And it might actually be in the packet. So I'm just gonna quickly, but I mean, what we're saying here, so can you see my cursor here?
Right.
What we're saying here, this is a pedestrian, there'll be bollards here, and this would be a pedestrian pathway with landscape, and we're not showing landscape in here. But the idea is to introduce a new landscape in this zone that would be visible here. And then this is actually a playground back here. So we're looking at options. We're still exploring that, options of where bikes and people come in. But this is a pedestrian zone with landscape. So, okay, so that's what we're proposing.
So what looks like a street coming in and dead ending.
Yeah, that's a fire access. Street. So we're proposing that you would not have a curb there. It would just be a plaza type.
Right. But so then as you move to the west, to this left of the drawing, right in that area where your cursor is, that becomes a landscaped area essentially at the same elevation, correct?
Yes.
Is there access into the building from this side of the, from this pedestrian way in that?
Well, the idea is there'd be access into the retail. There would be potentially access into the building here for, we're looking for bikes potentially.
Okay.
So you can see this little garden here and we're looking at, you know, it's, we're still working on that, but the idea that this might be, end up being the one of the ways to get in for bikes. So that's something that's still being developed, but we want to activate that, you know, that area.
Right.
It's important. And you know, we're not going to just leave it. I mean, I think it's important that we, you know, we do activate that space. And I think the opportunity, like if you approve what we'd shown previously, which I can run back to. Oops. Hold on a second. You can kind of see it here. Do you see that landscape?
Okay. Yeah.
That's, so we want to make that something special, like a destination. And then there'd be retail activated here. So you have this sort of covered arcade with retail and these two sort of landscape elements. Does that help?
Okay. Yeah, that helps because your elevations, you don't really show any elevations of that side of the building. And, you know, your massing comes up to pretty much the same height as the apartment building next to it. And so you're coming up to that. And I'm just curious as to what is in between those two buildings, your proposed building and the existing building, that softens that area from a commercial type building to a residential building.
Yeah, I think one of the key things with this, the preferred option, is you see this big break where we're pushing the building back on that side. And there is a slope up. So then that slopes down to that other level. Does that make sense? So it's sloping down. And one of the things why, you know, obviously, you know, because we're not maxing the volume, we have to be very careful about, you know, where we put the cuts. But we were able with this scheme to basically create this sort of major cut at that corner and then actually put not have people necessarily as many people sitting on that edge in the plan, so you're not looking at the residential,
right?
And then having another landscape like you saw in the axonometric here that sort of terminates it. Sorry if you could see that there, but that's the intent. And then this is the playground on that other side.
Excellent.
I have a question, Thomas.
Yeah.
So I saw in some of the plans that you were showing parking plus loading and unloading area. I'm just wondering how's that going to be achieved and where kind of like where's the entry to the underground parking?
Yeah. Let me go back. Yeah. What we're saying is the entry would be
I can jump in too, Thomas.
Yeah, maybe Dan, and that'd be good.
I'm Dan in Canterbury with Lover Architecture. And we've been in a discussion about, from a standpoint of parking access, to try not to create additional entries south of the building on that fire lane area that we were just discussing, and trying to use the existing entries to the parking garage and doing working with our team to generate reports related to ensuring that that's actually optimal in terms of exiting an entry. So as Thomas is showing there, the parking entry to the garage below the east space would use the existing apartment ramp to the north and then have a ramp down back down to the parking below the building. The loading and logistics area, which would be really primary loading for the entire campus, would be accessed, from the west and accessed under the building. And then from there, things would be able to move to the central and the north building below grade on the parking level. So is that helpful? So we're not proposing new parking entries anywhere. We're not going to have another curb cut, and we're not going to have more ramps and tunnels leading down. We're going to use what's there, essentially what's been established on the site.
Thank you very much.
Just a question. So the children's play area you're talking about is actually a deck over the top of that logistics loading area and under it, correct? Is that what's happening there?
Yes. Okay.
Now you don't show, like, unless you show the two arrows that you're coming into this particular parking underneath, basically the parking that's underneath the residential L-shaped building there in the corner. But then you have, you know, KU Central, and on the south side of that, there's an entrance into parking there. That all ties together under there, correct? Or is it bifurcated and separate?
It eventually all ties together. It's, you know.
Yeah, and the goal with this project is to, there may be some, you know, owner-specific parking, but essentially to have public parking connect, and the garages would connect underground below grade on all levels.
So there's really...
Have pass-throughs, sorry. They're not shown in this organization, but you'd essentially have aisles punching through to connect to the existing garages, so you'd be able to drive across the floor plates at this preliminary stage of concept.
we have a pretty much a dedicated team that's just working on the logistics of the loading and the parking, because it's, and working with, you know, to make sure that it all works and that, you know, we have the right capacities.
Okay, anyone else? Tim, Ting?
I have a question. With all of the unused allowed building height, is there any plans for occupying the roof with roof access? And as a corollary, looking at the plans, I can't really tell where the, looks like the elevator overruns and stair overruns, if there is roof access, where those will be located. I assume it looks like somewhat in the middle, but it's not certain.
Yeah, we're still working on that. There will be some overruns that we're not showing in these diagrams. The roof will not be accessible. So that won't, you know, so it, they'll just be limited to the, you know, the heights that were described, I think, you know. So if you look at the plan, I'll go to that plan and that might help you.
Is that a function of the building type?
It's a function of the building type. We can't have an accessible roof.
Okay.
And we're also planning to use the rooftop for PV and energy generation at this point. So that's sort of real estate we were anticipating for that. That's still underway in terms of studies though.
You can see here the volumes would be at this point set back. So here's some elevators and stairs in this location. So the idea is that they would be sort of in the center mass. And you can kind of see that here. Here's the atrium, the elevator bank. So you could imagine there'd be some raised areas in those zones.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. I wonder if you have an artist on your team that helps bring some local art concepts into the project?
We have not identified one yet, but I'm, you know, and I would leave it up to the client. So, but it's a really good point and something that I think obviously is a requirement.
So part of the conversation around how this project relates to the community, both Kirkland as well as the Kirkland Urban Site, is really thinking along the lines of engaging local, as we've talked about with local sourcing of timber, considering the local watershed and really rooting this in the sense of place is probably lending to some sort of thoughts about how to engage the public in terms of some of the expression and aspects of art has been under conversation. So
yeah,
we'll have more on that.
I think they're, you know, even looking at, if you have a chance to look at GGN's work, they actually work with artists in landscape. They, if you've been to Millennium Park in Chicago, they were the landscape architects for that. Which has these major art pieces within it. Obviously, we're not going to do that at this scale, at this location, but it's something they have experience with. And I think they could guide that process and help with the client thinking about what might make sense.
That would be great.
Yeah, I'll just jump in here. Yeah, we've had success working with local artists on the Sixth Street campus, just down the street. And we're happy to engage with local artists. We've got a number of those on a list that we have worked with on other projects, and happy to discuss that more with Tony and the city of Kirkland.
Thank you, that would be great. My other question is, there's a bus stop along 6th Street to the east side of the building, right? Are there any improvement plans for that bus stop?
Tony, I don't know what the status of that is, or
I think that the bus stop, maybe Stephen, I see you're off mute. Maybe
yeah,
you want to take this one?
I'll jump in and attempt to answer this one. So that's actually going to be abandoned. The existing one is being abandoned by the city, and we are planning right now through the offsite improvements to reconstruct that and bring the curb out to the face of the street. And then the current plan for East is that we would rebuild that bus drop off area for the Google shuttle program. So that long term, that is the idea behind that. So it will be rebuilt. That is the current plan, but that would be a Google shuttle stop. And I'm not entirely sure where the new bus stop is going for the city's bus stop, but I do know that that one is being abandoned.
Thank you, I see. My last question is, I heard, Thomas, you talked about how this last piece building is related to the other three or four buildings that's already built recently. Overall, it's one project. Can you expand on that, how some of the elements might tie all these buildings together, or would you see these buildings stand out alone, more like its own? Or I kind of want to understand this more.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I think if you look at these existing buildings, they're, you know, typically you have a mass that's broken by a volume that steps back. So you can sort of see that in this building, right? You have these two sort of facades and then there's a step back. And I think, and that's pretty common throughout most of the buildings on campus. You can see that here too, where the corner is maybe eroded to kind of work on the mass of the building. Now, these are all much taller buildings, right? Because they're at the max height limit. And we thought, well, let's try to take that, but maybe turn these, what are sort of breaks, into landscapes. So that's sort of, I think, how it relates. So it's different because it's a timber building, but we think that if you look at the basic diagram of these buildings, we've worked to be respectful of that in this proposal. So at that like really basic level of breaking down the mass. And I think if you go to the final, and I mean, this is still early. We're showing you the concept design. We think it's gonna be really beautiful when we render it and make it something more. So you kind of have to excuse, you know, these are still sort of the early days, but I think if you can imagine, you know, if you look at this facade, you have these two masses and then this really deep cut that will be, have landscape and push back. And that happens on every facade in a major way. And it really helps take something that's big and break it down into smaller pieces. So I think in terms of that relationship, it's pretty clear. And then we have a podium element that has its own character with the diagrid, arcade that goes around the piece. I mean, I think because the building is a little taller, we have to be very kind of, I would say, focused on where we can make those indents so we can actually make an efficient building. But that's really the goal. So I hope, does that answer your question?
Yes, yes, thank you.
Hi, that's actually a perfect segue into one of my questions. Looking at some of these views of the landscaped gardens, I'm noticing, you know, that your exoskeleton kind of grid isn't present on some of those cutback walls. Is that intentional, or is that, you know, just kind of a, you know, a product of, you know, quickly rendering? Is the thought being that this diagrid structure is only along the exterior and that you're going to treat these cutback walls with a different sort of glazing or a different sort of structure? What are your thoughts on that?
That is the intent, that, you know, where it opens to the garden, the views, the diagrid would stop, and then it would be more of an open facade at those locations. And those would potentially be, have operable, and be a little more active in those zones. And that, you know, the diagrid has specific requirements structurally, but we're able to do that. So you can sort of see here in this cut. So when it pushes back, that would be more of a simple glass structure. And we're still articulating how that would work, but there is a differentiation between the two. So does that answer the question?
Yeah. And getting into details, just I'm curious and I'm familiar with this type of structural system. Is the glass sitting on the exterior like a curtain wall, or is the wood structure sitting proud of the glass, which is, you know, kind of on the inside?
The glass would be exterior, but quite close to the diagrid. So that's the plan. And and it's not going to be 100% glass. We're working on differentiating. You know, one of the things we're looking at is even maybe the south facade has a little, you know, bit thicker mullions to, you know, obviously deal with solar glare. But the idea is the diagrid would be visible, and then on the arcade, it comes down and is exposed on the ground level.
Okay. And then if you wouldn't mind switching over to some of your street sections, I'm just curious to take another look at those. And I'm wondering what the spacing is between the adjacent buildings and what those, for lack of a better term, that canyon effect look is.
Let me just see. Dannon, do you want to pull up? I'm just thinking.
Yeah, there was one hand sketched one. I didn't know.
This one here.
You had any widths with.
This
neighboring buildings.
This is that thing I talked about. So it's a 40 foot, but I'll look for the hand sketch one. This one is what you were looking at, that idea?
Oh yeah, I was more, and it's something that's sometimes brought in at the CDC, you know, sometimes it's a drawing that we request for a later meeting, but I was just curious to see like a street section with like your proposal versus the existing building or the newly constructed buildings next to you, just to see what those heights and widths are and imagining shadow lines and things like that. So
okay. Yeah, I think let me look at the, Dan, and maybe you could take a look at the packet. I don't know if we have that specific drawing back at the overall packet to see.
Yeah, I don't think we have it.
But we can easily provide that.
Yeah, so, yeah. I think
the next.
Yeah, that's a little ahead of the game. Yeah, asking for that. I was just curious. I thought I'd saw something like it, but I guess it was more conceptual without that existing apartment building next to. So, okay.
Yeah, we're focusing on the master plan sections, the required sections through both that fourth Avenue section to the north of our building, and then the one that we discussed previously on the south side that becomes a fire lane and pedestrian kind of space primarily. So we've been focusing on the dimensions and the kind of character and requirements around the plantings related to those sections. So yeah. We can focus on that in a future conversation for sure.
But I think they're actually, I think they'll be nice spaces. We're not too close to those buildings, in my view, just in terms of the height, you know, especially since we're actually, you know, not 115 feet, you know. So I think that makes a big difference in terms of the scale. And if I go back, I'm just thinking here, that's not really showing you, but we have that and we will be sharing it. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So, I guess now, it's my turn.
Can I jump in? I've got a quick question, hopefully quick. I'm not real familiar with the construction type and this exoskeleton approach.
Mm-hmm.
That the diagrid is obviously a very, very strong design element right up front, which we typically would never see that sort of thing at the conceptual design conference.
Yeah.
Keeping the exoskeleton approach, are there other methods of either heavy timber or the CLT construction that pick up the lateral on the exoskeleton surfaces that don't involve the diagrid?
There are, but they're hybrids right now that use steel. So we're actually, you know, working on a performance-based design for this diagrid. And this is something we've done before. So it would go through that. There's room in the code to do a performance-based design. We're also looking at, so that's sort of to make, yes, there are other ways, but they're not as elegant, I would say, and or efficient. So I think we're looking at this as something that's a little bit has a character, and it is a major part of, you know, what we're thinking about for the design.
Okay, so picking up on Brad's question about where the glazing is located. So if I understand it correctly, we will see large unbroken surfaces of glass with possibly some spandrel glass at the floors. I know 14 foot floor to floor, you obviously are going to have some structural floor depth with either dropped ceilings or something else. Is there spandrel glass that gives us a wedding cake look to it?
I think that's what we're actually working on right now, is some of the ideas about the expression of the facade. We don't want the wedding cake, so we're looking at different ways to kind of give character to the massing. I think on the north facade, we're probably going to be having more glazing, and then some of the other facades would be modulated. It is not going to be all glass everywhere. That's not the intent. But we do want to celebrate the diagrid and have it be visible. Okay. So I think we're also looking at modulating the facade, slightly in terms of those areas that there's some areas that will be opaque, and thinking about the character of that. Those are all things that we're starting to study, but it's really wanted to share the concept and the base massing with you before we move too far.
Again, I'm kind of jumping into way beyond conceptual design, but the glazing that is there, for instance, on that north facade, if it's opaque, if it's, vision glass, is it all pretty much in the same plane, or is some of it in, some of it's out, some of it, or is it just pretty much one plane broken up by either spandrel or opaque sections, et cetera?
I mean, I think it would likely be mostly in the same plane. I think what we're trying to do is really get the relief from the pushbacks at the corners. They are so deep, so that really sort of reads as almost like a smaller building. But I mean, if that's I'd love to sort of understand your point of view on that. I mean, I think one of the things that's limiting us a little bit is because of the building type and the numbers that the client would like to do. We're trying to balance, having a facade that has too much irregularity and really focus on these sort of larger moves that really break the mass of the building.
Okay, that's fine.
And really quickly, Brad, we found a section through that, maybe this is something you're referring to, I could show really quickly, that cuts through adjacent buildings. You can kind of see very preliminarily, if that helps now, or we can wait to address it later on at another presentation. But
you want me to stop sharing and you can share yours?
Yeah, I'll just share this real quick in case there's a conversation around it to get some feedback.
Would that be helpful, Brad, to see that?
Sure, if you have it up, and I'll keep in mind that I'm asking for a drawing that's usually not shown at this stage, so.
It's a preliminary one, so we can just share it and see if it's useful to you and if it helps answer. Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a cut through from sort of Sixth Street looking, this is looking west. So you see on the left there is that 40 foot fire lane with planting screening the apartment building. Mm-hmm. On the very left-hand side with the fire access road and then the landscape buffer on the building side. And then on the right, you see the 57 foot kind of stipulation from the master plan in relation to that north section, so.
Yeah.
And the height of the apartment building, so. This is very preliminary. There's no rooftop information, et cetera, but this does have the floor to floor more or less established.
Yeah. So. No, this helps. And in general, how deep then are those cuts for each of the landscaped gardens?
They vary depending on which orientation, but they're, 20 to 30 feet in some cases.
So pretty deep, yeah.
Yeah, they're deeper. Yeah.
Actually, they're deep. I mean, the ones on the corner are deeper, and then these ones are around 20, 30 feet.
And you've got enough measurements here. I can easily imagine 10 feet or 20 or 30 feet and how deep that's going to be cutting into the facade. So, okay. Now this helps picture some of the massing for, you know, how pedestrians perceive it and next door neighbors and whatnot. So thank you. This helps.
Sure. I can get back to your screen time. I still stop sharing.
Do you guys want to go back to the presentation, or do you have any other specific questions?
I would like to go back to the presentation, please.
Okay.
And I have a couple of questions there.
My screen now, is that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd like to ask, the entrance from 6th Street to the north, is it accessible?
This, yes, it is accessible.
Okay, because I saw the stairs and there, so I just wanted to make sure it is.
Yeah, and, it's great and accessible.
Okay, great. And then if you can, please show us again where you plan on having the weather protection around the building, and maybe if you thought about how you're going to work that with the mass timber and the exposed beam and the grid.
Yeah, we're working on this, but this is the idea that you would have a pedestrian arcade that wraps the building. We're looking at, there's a little bit of, this might stop at this location because of the grade, so that might actually pull out to the edge. But where the retail is, we're thinking we would have more of a grade element, and then it wraps around. We've done many buildings where you have the underside of the wood exposed. So there would probably be, so that it's protected from rain. And we would take special care with these exterior columns. And they would be reinforced with steel on the interior, so that, you know, there's not an issue of long-term structural issues for those elements. So we've done that as well. So, you know, we're looking at that, but I have to stamp the drawing, so it's gonna
yeah.
I have to make sure that it works. So that's that's something that we take really seriously, especially in a climate that, you know, you have rain and you have to make sure that things will last.
Okay, so the main although you have the pedestrian and fire lane suggested on the south side, so you anticipate the main traffic to be on the north facade?
Well, this is more of a fire lane, and then the main entry and the landscape will be here. You can kind of see maybe I just go to the axonometric, this may be easier to understand that. You know, this is sort of the main access point through the campus. This is the landscape. This is the pedestrian walkway with the arcades, with the two retail. So this in a way, the south side is the less traveled side of the building. But we do have a landscape there, and that's where we're saying there would be no vehicular access except for the fire department.
But there is an access from the buildings to the south of that lane.
Yeah, I mean, because that's just not a major entry. It's kind of more of a service. I mean, in terms of the campus, the south side is not, just doesn't face the plaza.
Yeah.
Connect. Am I answering your question, or am I not hearing exactly what your question is? Maybe Dan and...
No, I just need a little bit more details about, you know, the people that live on the southern side or the southern facade of the building, how they're going to connect to the facade. And because one of our goals was really about looking how it engages with the neighborhoods next to it. And there is retail on the north and a little bit to the south. So I would like to have a little more details about how it's all connected with the south side.
On the south side.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, pedestrian engagement and public engagement and all of that.
I think we can address your issue. I think the biggest thing we're doing is we're breaking down So we're breaking down the mass of the building right past the apartment buildings. So, you know, this, it doesn't show here, but if you could, you see this drawing, this is the, you know, this is that sort of cut, that really pretty deep cut, that garden there. And then this is actually where the internal potential coffee and cafe space would be. And you can kind of see how, you know, if you look at the ground level here, this is that existing apartment building. And then that cut is sort of right there to break down the mass of that building. And I think one of
the not public, sorry, the coffee is for
the not public. It's the upper floor. But yeah, there's not, you know, those are good questions. I think one of the things we're thinking about is that would be the potential bike entry. That's one of the things that would activate it. So that idea of a really interesting way to get into the building with bikes, and that's where they would come in. So thinking about that as an active entry. And then on the ground floor, you know, you can see the retail wraps around, and then the idea of introducing some type of garden element there on the ground floor.
That apartment building just is actually the lower levels is a parking garage. So it's actually, there's no real active connection between units and that alley space or that fire lane. The entries to the building is off Sixth Street for those apartments. And some of the upper levels have balconies overlooking that, but there's actually a parking garage levels at that grade plane with currently a very thick screening of trees that it would be continuing to replicate with the landscape buffer along that apartment building. So I don't know if that's helpful.
If I was thinking we could maybe get some pictures.
We actually probably have some in the context of the set. Let me look for those real quick.
Yeah, page 23. Picture 5, I think, is a picture of the apartment building, but I don't know if it shows you the alley as that you asked for.
Thomas Dannon, this is David Bryant with CBRE. At the bottom of the screen here, it shows a small pathway with stairs, and that comes from the apartment complex to the plaza area of Kirkland Urban, and also the other pathway goes down and will take you to Kirkland Urban South. Through the back, so that connects south to east on the back way without getting into the logistics space.
Is that, yeah,
and that's existing,
yeah, we're maintaining those existing pathways across the area where the daycare is and the site, the path going to the west from there as well on site. Yeah, We don't have that shown in this very clearly, so apologies.
Yeah, I think we can, and if it's helpful, we can follow up with a drawing that addresses these, you know, more carefully. That's been sort of worked through a bit more. But I hear that you want to make sure that that's an active, you know, as much as it can be facade of the building. But I mean, I think having the retail wrap will also have a big. And then having a landscape here that I think is also really important.
Mm-hmm. So you don't see the retail protruding that lane. It will be just a face, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I don't know, Dan, and if we have a site plan that shows the landscape, because that I think it's really just shown in this model.
We don't have a site plan of the. We're still developing landscape concepts
on that, so. On that side.
But if you have feedback on that, we'd be interested. Yeah.
Okay.
This Randall, I've got a couple more questions if you're done, Shauna.
Go ahead.
Okay. The massing. When you look at the massing option three preferred, or do you just look at the massing, what I want to do is be able to understand what you're trying to do here. Because now you're calling it the diametric grid, and it's an exoskeleton. And so basically the best economics of this thing is to make it a rectilinear box all the way around. And every time you start cutting it out, you know, it changes that exoskeleton structurally as to how you have to rebrace that or do different things. I would imagine I haven't done one of these, so I don't know if I've even gone the right direction here. But what I'm looking at is I look at these massing studies and I look at the three buildings that we have. We have north, central, and south as the three major components of this. And now we have stepped back with a total different concept. And to say that, yeah, there's some positive negatives and that, and but, you know, as I look at it and say there's a podium, well, you've got a podium that has a basically a veranda around it in the base where you've recessed back, but that exoskeleton is the same surface all the way up. And so it's a box. Now, I'm not saying that derogatorily. I'm saying that you have stepped away from the other three buildings almost completely, is the way that I'm looking at it and seeing it. And yet then when you go to like option number three, where you start cutting corners out and this type of thing, it's under, you know, terminology that we're trying to relate it to the other building. And I'm not so certain if that's really the ideal thing to do, because it is a different building and it's a different concept. And, you know, are the owners the same on each of the buildings? I don't know. But is this particular owner, I mean, I like the idea of a timber building. I like the idea that it's shorter than what's allowable in the zone. They just didn't go in and maximize the envelope in that. But I look at the massing on this and I just, you know, I kind of go back to option two, because it starts to show kind of what that exoskeleton is, what the building is. Instead of trying to make it like something else, the exoskeleton's there. And so I, you know, where you take sections, blocks out of the building, you know, the other way is you leave the exoskeleton in place, but you take the interior away from the inside of it, so the lighting is different, or the, you know, it's just all of a sudden you've got a grid going around with no glass, nothing, but that's your corner cutout, or something of that order. I'm personally having a hard time looking at trying to relate it to the other buildings and cutting some things up and saying, well, this relates to that cutout and that relates to the cutout, but they're diametric opposing each other, because there's just total different structural systems. It's a total different building. And I'm having trouble with that massing.
No, I hear what you're saying. I think what is a little bit counterintuitive is that actually the last one is the most efficient structurally, because we don't have as much diagrid. It's much harder to punch a hole in a diagrid than it is to stop it. So we actually have these corners, if you look at the plan where the diagrid occurs, and it always creates an L. And then it's structurally, it's pretty simple to actually put a column down and stop it. We don't actually have to have as much of it, so we can have a view. So I hear what you're saying. I think on a fundamental level, what we're doing is breaking down the massing of the building, right? And we're doing it with landscape, not just moving the facade in and out. So the relationship is really that. And I think instead of having just a break and then a recess, we're making that recess into a place. So it is different. It is different there, but there is a relationship. You know, what I think the other buildings were working to do is to just, they're quite large. How do you break the massing into so that it doesn't feel as large a building? And I think what we've worked to do is work within the logic of the diagrid, because, and I understand we're working and learning as we sort of work with the structural system. Number two is actually the hardest to do, to punch through it, which doesn't necessarily intuitively make sense, but that's, you know, what we found. So, you know, the box, you know, or sort of a more sort of pure box expression of the diagrid, you actually have much more diagrid than you need necessarily for the lateral system of the building, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we can actually break it apart and it actually works. And I think from a an experiential point of view, from the interior, those cuts really help make these office spaces great spaces. And we also think, you know, it's nice to have these landscapes at the podium level. Just because when you look at the building as it stands, there's some landscape, but and there are landscape areas on the new buildings. But, you know, maybe introducing more of that, you know, directly adjacent to office was something that the client was really excited about. So they're really excited about option three in terms of the experience of the office space. And we're excited about it just because there's an opportunity to do an integrated structural system. So I hear all your comments and I can understand that you might see the connection. And, you know, I think as not as clear, but I guess what I, if you just sort of look at it as a strategy for breaking down the massing of the elements. And I think if you look at the view D, you know, on from an urban point of view, if you look at Sixth Street, that view that I think I have right up there. And then you look back to this option, I think that's the concern we had where we're punching through. You're not taking the massing of that and it's just the full width, right? So that was the kind of concern on those.
I get what you're saying, but by how you treat it, a rectilinear box has a massing to it that you can design with, where you take the punches in and you, or you punch it out, or you do something differently. I don't know, maybe you offset that diametric grid one grid back and you have parts of it punching out. I don't know, but I just, it's a different building. It's a different concept and it's a totally different building. Because when you look at this here, you look at the, you know, it's the central, you know, you've got the tiered wedding cake. You've got the podium where it's two tiered podium, then you got three or four floors, and then you've got kind of a podium, and then that becomes a podium for the top floor. And yeah, you've cut the corner out and you've got some things kind of jutting in and out on those buildings, and the other two buildings are the same way. But this building here, because of its exoskeleton, is, you know, it is a building that is rectilinear. It works. Yeah, you've got a diagonal or a triangular type deal going on the surface of it, but it's a rectilinear building. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if what we have here is expressing that building. And when I try to tie it to the other buildings, do we really need to? We need to relate to the other buildings. And that's where the cushion of landscaping and different color and different things may come out in that. But I'm just raising the question because I look at all three options and I don't know if there's one that, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to want to pop for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think let me just try to repeat back what I'm hearing. It's like, you're more concerned about the relationship, or are you concerned about the preferred option?
Neither.
Okay.
I'm concerned that, I'm not sure if the word is concerned. I'm just looking at it that when you take the structural and the glass and the finish systems of the other three buildings, they're all have a lot of elements that are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And same product, same stuff. And all of a sudden now we have a building that is different.
Yes.
And so my question is, let's make it different. because you jump over that, you go to the two buildings to the south that have been there for 15, 20, 25, 30 years. They're different. Each builder, developer built their own building. This is a complex.
Yeah.
Now, if you want the complex to be all unified and to be commercial and look commercial, of which it's, you know, add two more buildings of the same thing. And yes, it, you know, it's Microsoft campus redone over here. Or is it the way Microsoft did it, where they really went out and they said, okay, that one's across the street, that's going to have a certain look. The one across the street over there is a different look, that type of thing. And so I'm just,
this is a gateway building. It's built to suit by the owner now. The other buildings were sort of in a different structure. They want it to be special. It's a mass timber building. It would be really innovative. It would be a really great innovative building in this entire region. And it would be in Kirkland. We think, you know, it can really be something special.
Well, and that's where I'm going with it it needs to, you know, how we relate it to the other buildings may not be, you know, it's got the same, you know, flashing on it and colored glass and this type of thing and that. But if it's going to be a gateway building and it's going to be a timber building, then it needs to be its own building, I'm saying.
I couldn't agree more. We just want to be sensitive that it contributes to the overall character and, you know, pedestrian experience of the campus. So I think
what you're doing with the landscaping and the way around the building and how it sits in there, absolutely, I think you are doing that. Mm-hmm. And that, but I'm just saying, I'm picking up on your gateway building and it's a special building. And so I don't want to diminish the special building.
I couldn't agree more. I think and I appreciate your candid comments. I think it'll be an amazing building, and if you believe this direction is feasible, and I think the club is super excited about this direction, I think when we come back, I think we can address some of the questions about the character and how it can really be a gateway, but still be a great moment within this overall campus and this overall area of the city.
And it may have something to do with the way it was presented, just that we presented an analysis of the existing buildings around and then tied it to like something that we're doing. But actually the moves that we're making on this building, as Thomas mentioned, they relate directly to the diagrid and concepts within and internal to the structural system as well as the interiors. And so it's perhaps at this point, at this level of articulation concept, kind of incidental that they have similar languages or logics. But I think that as we develop things, particularly in relation to materials and envelope and articulation further layers, you're going to see this thing stand out quite a bit from the adjacent buildings, despite there being some, you know, relationship in terms of how the corners might and how the thing meets the sky and how we wanted to take the massing up so that you get some sky breaks and you let light through and down in. It wasn't taken from the existing buildings as a direct, like, oh, let's replicate that. It was kind of like a logic that is there on the site that still relates to the site and getting light into those garden spaces and down to the plaza, et cetera. So that's kind of, it has a lot more to do with that as well than really trying to connect to and relate to the existing buildings on the campus.
Well, I look at it that if you look at these elevations, you look at the D elevation on 6th Street, you've got three distinct buildings. You've got on the left, you've got the residential building, you got the office building in the middle, and you got another residential building, and you've got two residential buildings that are built in different decades. And so they're the fabric of those and how they relate, they aren't the same and that, which is great. Now, when you go to elevation or C, and you look and say, okay, you've got three very strong corporate buildings in front of it, and you got this building peeking out from behind. And if it was, to me, if it was the same as those three buildings, you'd lose it. You wouldn't see it. In this particular case, you have a chance that it's going to peek out from behind and you're going to see it and go, aha, I want to go explore that and take a look at it.
That's great. I think it will be that. And I think it's a good thing, like you said.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for your comments. And that is the intent. We want this to be a place that draws people. We're showing that view because we feel that we can draw people into this community, into the campus through the architecture and through the landscape. So,
would you describe this as the most sustainable option out of the three, in not only in terms of materials, but also in terms of daylight and connection to the environment?
So the term sustainable is always, say something's more or less. I think from an experiential point of view, which, in terms of having a variety of spaces, like in connection to landscape, I think it's the strongest. I think it's just really having that space for landscape and connection to landscape. It's like the degree is small, but I think that's an important element of it, is just the experience of the building in terms of the occupants. You have more access to a variety of interior spaces in this one than the other, because of the depth of the cuts into the mass. And that each area has its own sort of what we call a mid-door space, which is a space that can be open to the exterior in a major way. So, for me, that's an important piece of something being sustainable, in that it's about bringing fresh air in and a variety of experiences. So
in the other options, you would not be able to bring some fresh air in.
They're just not to the degree that this one does, mm-hmm. and the logic of it, because it's sort of like these incidental things in a bigger mass, right? Like if you look at the earlier options, you have just a big north-facing space and it's not broken up. So you have access to the outdoors from every portion of the building. It's more, it's more equitable, that it's not just on the first one, the terraces are just on the south and in the corners. And here they're sort of distributed throughout the building.
And they serve too on the interior, which is important to break up the office spaces so that offices have, rather than having a big long view out across, the whole facade of offices, you actually look out and you see a garden space that you're connecting you between your office area and the next one. So you're, as Thomas said, kind of distributing those green terrace spaces around the perimeter so that it breaks up spaces on the inside as well and gives people working instead of just a giant sea of offices. It gives them a break, visual as well as atmospheric, as well as sensory, in terms of if you go out there and you can open windows and have that connection. It's actually really thinking through how the folks on the inside of the building are working inside the building. And I think that's not as much the focus of this conversation in terms of the way this massing relates to the site, but it is something on the interior that's quite important, something we're focusing heavily on for the users of the building as well. So
I think this is the section that Shoshana, that, it's a diagram, but that's the idea, that you have these cuts and then you have interior terraces that would be double height in some cases with operables.
Okay, got it. So
to talk about the sustainable side is that by having those double height terraces, we can actually bring more north light into the buildings on those sides. And that's actually a good thing from a kind of energy use point of view. We're also looking at those sort of mid-door spaces as places that we don't have to condition to the same level as the rest of the building. So you're convincing me to say that it's the most sustainable of the three. But since I'm not an engineer, I always sort of, you know, defer to the larger team.
Right. I was just wondering, you know, what's the other added value of that option, you know, other than what you have claimed before. And thank you for that. Is there anyone else with follow-up questions to the applicant? And if not, do we have any member of the audience that would like to speak, or questions, requests?
If you'd like to speak, just use the raise hand feature, please. I'm not seeing anyone, Shoshana.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So I think that now is a good time for deliberation. So would anyone like to start?
Yeah, I can jump in. I'll just keep it brief, kind of a high level view, because I'm curious to hear the rest of the team's thoughts. I'm really excited about the mass timber. I really enjoy the details of the structural system. These are the types of structural systems that I think are worth kind of showing off and celebrating, and the structure actually kind of becomes a design. I'm a little worried that it might get hidden behind the facade. Tim mentioned that if it's glass, it's all proud and it's flat, you know, that it might feel, you know, it might take away from the feeling of the building. You know, I'd hope that the structure was sitting outside fully, you know, of the box. And so I'm curious if everyone thinks that the gardens essentially are the only thing that's going to break up the facade. I think if the diagrid was sitting on the outside, it would help break up and create visual interest. But if it's inside the glazing, you know, are we just relying on the gardens to create, the adequate mass, kind of tonation? So I'd like everybody to kind of chime in. I'm just curious where everyone sits on it.
I share the same concern that Brad has in regards to kind of like the facade. It seems that the option three has very well-defined flat facade that face the residential areas. Looking at kind of like the other buildings, the existing buildings, they all have this common element that is kind of like this hat at the top. Also, they are pushing back the facade of the last level. I don't know if like here it's kind of like worth to explore any other options that bring more interest that rather than just like having very defined void faces and the rest just like treated with the material itself and not with any other volume that might kind of like go in or out of kind of like what is right now. Other than that, I think that the structure, it's interesting. Definitely, this is going to be element that is going to highlight a lot since it's very unique in its character from the other one. But just kind of like concerned about that, those flat facades that are basically four stories long in verticality and horizontally, they are limited to kind of like the voids on the side. That I'll let anyone else kind of like just share their thoughts on these as well.
From a massing standpoint, I think option three works best because it does tend to break up the overall box, as Randall puts it, most successfully. We're tending to dive way beyond a conceptual design conference into a design response conference here by really, you know, picking in a little too deeply. I understand the comments, and I agree that even with the broken up facades, the treatment of the glazing, and if you will or won't see the diagrid behind it, the way this is presented, this is at sort of framing stage. If this were a, you know, residential thing where you see the skin, you see the skeleton, you don't see the skin on it. When we see the skin at the CDC level, then that's when it all is really going to make some sense. Tony or John, are we allowed to use Google Earth to, you know, obviously the client in this case is Google. I've been on my iPad just fiddling around with Google Earth, and lots of these questions and concerns are really easily addressed by just floating around this site and looking at it and standing here, standing there. You know, is that something that we're allowed to do, or that the applicant is allowed to use? Or is it a commercial use of it is not allowed?
I think it's fine. Are you asking if the applicant can use this now or as part of a future meeting?
Yeah, now or at the CDC level. It really, lots and lots of the questions that have come up would be very simply addressed by just kind of looking at this. For instance, the on that south, the fire lane, descent off of 6th down to the plaza level, that existing apartment, to my eye, my recollection is there's a large grove of trees or hedge, if you will, that sits up on top of a large retaining wall that is going to be way above the plaza level for the, so the questions that have come up so far about how's that going to feel and what's the experience in there is, it's not as if you go straight across at the plaza level and are looking at the apartments. You're looking at a retaining wall and trees. And as I recall, it's the parking level with the openings for the parking garage there. So, you know, that's a totally different experience. It's kind of one-sided, where our project on this side is experienced completely differently than the other side. As well as the coming in off of the intersection there at the post office intersection, I'll call it, as you enter in and get to the upper pedestal for the main central plaza, and then the little the pub building and all of that. It really, I think we get a much better sense of how this is going to relate to the overall concept. There we go. That's perfect. So, yes. So this doesn't have all of the job shack trailers on it on the old site, but there are two of the trailers that are there on that southern boundary that shows how deeply those are sitting at essentially the arcade level, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a large retaining wall and then a large hedge of trees right there. So as we descend off of 6th, that's a steep descent. We've got a new building that's right there on the east edge, with a 40-foot separation on that south side. So that experience, I think, is going to work fine. The other, you know, coming in off of the intersection at the post office, that's going to be wide enough. And certainly the south end of that existing, the apartment building is nothing. It's just an entrance to the parking garage. And very minimal else. Once you get beyond it, then, you know, the fun stuff starts happening. And our building, this new building, goes way beyond that. So I think the scheme is going to work pretty well in the sense that the landscaping and the pedestrian experience is going to be the most important part of it. The one, and obviously jumping a little too far beyond into the CDC level, the one concern I would have with this would be that the other buildings on site all seem to have a fairly well-defined top to them, or termination, if you will, at the upper level. And I'm not talking about any of the overruns and the mechanical screening. I'm just talking about the uppermost floor and sort of the baseball cap, baseball bills, if you will. And I just hope that the diagrid doesn't just get kind of chopped off like it's a hedge that gets, topped, that there is some sort of definition to how that building terminates it, whether it's nibbling away at the corners a little bit in the upper floors, or putting some sort of a lid on it that says this is the top of this very elegant, nice, shorter than it could have been if it's a different construction type. I fully applaud it, like Brad says, the use of the heavy timber. I think that's a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, we're putting this really nice heavy timber building on top of some really expensive, horrendously embodied floor levels of parking. For why on earth we're doing it for cars in this day and age is just beyond me, but we still apparently are forced to do that. If we could do a third of the concrete that's down there and do two levels of parking instead of four, I would fully applaud that. It would make a whole lot more sense for the overall idea of this, wood building. But when it has to sit on that expensive concrete, that's too bad. So anyway, I like, in terms of the conceptual design, option three is my preferred choice. I agree with the applicant on that. So that's all I have.
Thank you for the comments.
Okay, next, who would like to go next? Ting, we haven't heard you in a while.
Sure, I can share my comments. Tim, that is a good talk. Massing-wise, I like the simplicity of this whole structure. The only thing is those cuts on the upper level, somehow they're not so generous to me. To my eyes, this seems to be a little bit narrow, especially in the central atrium. They look like an elevator tower to me. Maybe in the future meeting, they can be played, make them more spacious. And also at the lower level, the pedestrian arcade, I'm just commenting what I want to see for the next meeting. If those pedestrian walkway, covered walkway can be spacious as well, that would work much better for, people pass by. And then the building is simple. I feel like you can find some similar type of buildings around the world. Maybe a few from some big cities in China or some cities in Australia. So I think it's really important to bring, like what you mentioned, to bring some artists on board to create a sense of place. When people walked here, they don't just see all these contemporary glass and panels. And then they also think, oh, here, this is Kirkland. And we have our local arts incorporated in here. That will be something really nice. And then I want to comment on the landscaping opportunities. I like that landscaping plaza is kind of to the center of the building. I think there's a great opportunity to activate the northeast corner of the building where you're coming from the 6th Street. That will help activate, bring people into this central plaza. And then the last comment I have is, when I walk to Kirkland Urban, I see that bright horizon, that daycare's place, it's really refreshing to see parents with younger kids in and out. So at that corner, I think there's a great opportunity to implement some family-oriented design stuff into it. So when parents pick up the kids, they can still hang out in those area, use it, enjoy the open space. Overall, thank you for the amazing design. I think it's gonna look like a gem when it's done. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Okay.
This is Randall again, and I think you heard my comments, and then I'd have to say with the others, I think option three is probably a great point to really work from and to move forward with it. And that, and so I would support option three on the massing. And, you know, as Tim was bringing up, and as you really look around it, you know, just how it all sets down onto that, onto the site and the landscaping and that, I think, you know, those are all things that we can work through and move forward. So I would support option three.
Thank you.
Brad?
Yeah, I'm fine with option three. Kind of some of my final comments would be that I really appreciate the sculptural aspect of the building, but I want to emphasize to the architect to be sure to show off the structure, because I think that diagrid really provides all of the texture for the facade, which it really helps break it up. Just thinking, for example, if this massing was presented to us, would be covered with hardy board panels and just regular old punched openings, I'd say no way, that there's not enough modulation. So I think it's really important to emphasize the exoskeleton, you know, to really provide the texture to it to help break up, you know, any monotony and create some visual interest. So I think if they make sure that it doesn't somehow get hidden behind the glazing, and they find a way to maybe define kind of that top, you know, roof level, then I think it'll be a great project.
Thank you.
Okay, has anyone else?
I just one more thought, and it just dawned on me too. This building at nighttime, or certainly in December when it's dark at noon, when it's internally lit, is really gonna glow. It's because you will see the exoskeleton in silhouette, and I think that's gonna be a really strong, nice piece of it that we, you know, otherwise wouldn't see. You know, for instance, as you go further on 6th and you see the existing Google buildings, I'm always amazed at trying to peek inside at nighttime to see who's there, what are they doing, you know, what's going on. And I think this building will have multiple floors of exciting, interesting stuff happening at nighttime when it's internally lit. So, and again, I agree with Brad, making sure that exoskeleton shows through and is what people go, wow, I've never seen that before in Kirkland. So.
Thank you, Tim.
Carlos, would you like to add anything?
I think that the structural solution that the applicant has proposed is quite interesting. Just kind of like doing a quick Google search of mass timber buildings. I guess that I come up, well, a lot of buildings came up kind of like similar to these massing options that the applicant has proposed. That doesn't mean that it has to be kind of like exactly as the massing. I think that there are a lot of treatments that the applicant can play with in regards to exterior skin, not only just a typical glazing. Maybe all of these questions that the board is bringing up today can be resolved on a further meeting once kind of like the applicant has determined the right type of approach and something that is out of the ordinary or that doesn't kind of like fall into the typical curtain wall system that doesn't have any interest or visual appeal to the pedestrians. Obviously, this is kind of like be connected to a series of buildings, and I'm okay with the option three, but still trying to ask the applicant to come up with an interesting solution for just the overall design of the exterior.
Thank you.
Does anyone else would like to speak again? Randall, I see you're on audio mode. Would you like to add something?
No, I just left it open. Everybody said, you know, Brad and Tim reiterated the exoskeleton, and I agree with Tim. At night, this thing could be absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Okay. So I join the members of the boards about sharing the potential excitement about the new building with all the new features. And it seems like we're all looking forward towards the design response conference. I like the emphasis you put on the landscaping there, because it kind of, from a bird eye view, it kind of connects to the Peterkirk Park. There is to the west side of the entire complex. It's important to bring some of that green, lush environment towards the back of it. Not to repeat what my friend said, but to continue what Ting said, I wish to see a little bit more of family-friendly features. I think it's a very central and important complex in the life of Kirkland, and it's beautiful and it's going to be amazing. But there is the daycare, and there's also the Teen Union building not far from there. And it's kind of a place where basically all ages can hang out. And I would like to see some more solutions to a multi, you know, age or multi-interest activation there. I mean, it could be either through structure or retail or whatever, but I would like it to be like very central place for everyone around to hang in. And other than that, I don't think I have anything else to add, but to agree with my friends. So, but I would like to ask Tony what we are required to do now. Is there a motion or what's the next step?
Yeah, John can probably elaborate a little bit on the if there needs to be a motion on the massing. But then once we figure that out, then I can help you with what we want to see from the applicant as far as the design response application materials. So.
Yeah, I don't think we need a motion for this. I think the next step would just be make sure that the applicant's clear on the what's being asked for the design response conference. So maybe Tony, you can just run through maybe some of the key issues. Definitely, it looks like option three is the preferred option. But what are the items that's needed for the next meeting?
Okay. Yeah, let me pull up again the slide I showed at the beginning on what is typically required or the standard requirements. So here's a list of the standard requirements for the design response conference application. Some of the things that I heard in your discussions was you want to see street sections showing the adjacent buildings and how they relate to the proposed building, specifically to show the adjoining buildings within the project and outside of the project. Also the how the final design of the south fire entry comes together, looking at that. Also, the design of the area near the daycare use, and is there an opportunity for providing some play structures or similar, something like that for families to hang out in that area. There was obviously a big interest in showing the construction and the timber construction and how that relates to the exterior of the building and kind of showing that off and that kind of thing. Is there anything else that board members would like to see?
I think that if we can see some a little bit of a solar study of the North Plaza, that would be very helpful too.
Shoshana, I did have one thing in my notes that Tony didn't call out, and it had to do with one of Ting's comments regarding an artist and art. Mm-hmm. If that's something that can, you know, if there's any kind of details that could be brought with the DRC application, that'd be great, I think.
Yeah, that was a little bit covered on my, so there's those design standards that they have, and I think that's something that the applicant, obviously that's good to reemphasize that, but also the applicant should be looking at those, making sure that those are being met with the application.
Thank you, John.
Okay, anything else we might have skipped? Okay, so what should be our next step now? Should we schedule a design response conference or?
No, typically what will happen. So I guess first before we get into that, Thomas or Dannon, do you guys have any questions for the board as far as the application materials are concerned?
I think we're good, and we'll probably follow up with you. And just want to thank everyone for their candid and thoughtful responses. So we're really excited to do this project in Kirkland. Super excited. So want it to it's going to be a great project.
So with the way the design response is, actually, there's nothing that we need to do. So the applicant will submit the design response conference application. We will review it for completeness, and then we will schedule and notice the design response conference. So there's no, we don't have to continue it to any specific date. It's just based on when the applicant will submits their materials to the city. So.
Okay. So I think that now is the time to move for administrative issues.
Yeah. So as usual, we will poll for attendance for the next DRB meeting.
Do we have anything?
But I don't think there's anything for the first meeting in June currently. So we'll send out the email canceling the meeting if nothing does pop up on the agenda. But right now there's currently nothing. And I just wanted to mention again that this is Tim's last meeting. Amazing work, Tim, over the last, 8+ years. And I'll talk to Jeremy and see if we can schedule some sort of soiree. Maybe keep it limited.
When we emerge from COVID, if we can also include Dave Russell, who
totally.
He finished his 8 years and was mm-hmm. just sort of drifted off into nothing because we couldn't all meet together in person. So I look forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Great.
So that's it for me, Shoshana.
Okay. So would anyone like
I'll move for adjournment.
Second.
Anyone opposed? Okay. So I think we're all in union consent to say goodbye to Jim and good night.
Good night.
Night. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Night, everybody.
Have a good